This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Maurice Ben-Mayer, who's the president of Stryker in South Pacific. Now, Stryker is spelled S-T-R-Y-K-E-R. G'day, Maurice. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Alan.
Now, tell us what Stryker is. What does it do?
Well, Stryker is a med tech company, and essentially that means it's...
Based in the US.
Based in the US, yes. Based out of the US, but a global organisation. And we're in the field of pretty much anything you'd see in the hospital space or in the ambulances as well. But primarily anything you see in the operating room, from hip and knee implants to infrastructure to surgical robots.
It's got a wonderful history too, going way back to... a person named Dr. Stryker, Homer Stryker.
That's
back
right.
In 1936. Now, tell us what it first made, because I think it was, it's been in medical technology from the start, but obviously not doing the sort of things you're doing now, back then.
No. It's an amazing history and really humble beginnings. Dr. Homer Stryker was an orthopedic surgeon in Kalamazoo, Michigan, and essentially he found that he didn't have the technology and the tools he needed to treat his patients. And so he set about inventing them in his own tool shed. And his first inventions were a heel raise and then also a cast cutter. From then on, it's 77 years later, and we are 33,000 employees, 100 countries, and still growing strong.
It's amazing they didn't have a cast cutter. They needed to build the cast.
That's right.
Cutter.
There's always a first.
That's right. So now, of course, you're into robotics, and I'm just wondering, because you're now hearing about robots becoming involved in surgery.
That's right.
But do you think, how can I put it? I visited the BMW car factory in Germany a couple of years ago, and
yes,
it was entirely robots from start to finish, mm-hmm, right? And human beings came in and checked it at the end. Do you think we're heading down that road? Do you think we'll end up being operated on entirely by robots?
I can't see a time where we'll be totally operated on by robots, but certainly robotics will be playing an increasing part in patient treatment over the next decade. There's still a strong role for the surgeon in terms of decision making, but in terms of executing a procedure, in terms of accuracy, you really can't beat a robot.
Yes. Well, tell us about your company's role in robotics, mm-hmm, in surgery. Are you starting to sell them now?
So we've been involved certainly in the R&D space for robotics for over 10 years, but we've had a commercial robot called the Mako robot for 7 years now. They've only been in Australia for the last 3 years due to regulatory requirements, but it's primarily focused on joint replacement at the moment. So if you're having your knee replacement done or your total hip replacement done, this robot assists the surgeon in actually undertaking that procedure. And all it is doing is taking what the surgeon has planned to do for you and making sure that the surgeon can actually execute that perfectly.
So, but what does it mean, though? Does the robot do it, or does the surgeon still do it? And if so, what role does the robot play?
So the surgeon would take the CT scan and decide where they want the implants placed. And placing an implant in the body is actually very difficult. It takes a huge amount of skill to get it correct every time. And what the surgeon does is they would plan the procedure. Then essentially once they've planned it, they lock it in. And then the robotic arm comes into the surgical space, and it's guided by the surgeon. But the way the robotic arm operates is that it won't allow the surgeon to deviate outside of what he's planned to do. So if you can imagine a saw coming in to cut the bone, there is a haptic control that prevents that saw blade from going anywhere other than where the surgeon had originally intended. And so that makes the accuracy of the procedure significantly greater. And what that allows the surgeon to do is to disrupt less soft tissue, do smaller incisions, and it helps in patient recovery and also the longevity and how long the implants can last.
It sounds like it gets rid of human error.
It does to some degree, yes.
Are you getting any resistance?
Initially, we did have resistance, and particularly in Australia, our our surgical or our surgeon communities are very evidence-driven. And so we've spent a lot of time building our evidence around the clinical outcomes of this robot. And as those have been coming into publication, the confidence in those robots actually doing what we said they were going to do is increasing. And so the utilisation is growing significantly.
I presume this robotic surgery is the sort of future of the company, but what's your bread and butter?
Our bread and butter is really in two primary areas. Hip and knee replacements is a large portion of our business. And in Australia, if you've had a hip replacement, probably a one in three chance that you have a Stryker hip replacement in you. Likewise with knee replacements.
Well, so you sell the actual prosthetics.
Yes, that's right.
The new hip, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the actual implants, the hip and knee prostheses, and then the other part of our business is the operating room infrastructure. So when you go into an operating room, you can see the lights and the cameras, and the equipment that's involved in the procedure, the table, and we provide all of that as well.
There was an interesting note in my notes for you that I presume came from you, which is that you're trying to balance a workforce that is so satisfied, the company jumped from 25 to 1 in the GPTW study. I don't know what that is. In 4 years, how does Stryker balance humility with growth? Hmm. So I take it from that you're struggling with humility.
We try and stay humble. If you think back to our origins as a company, it was a single orthopedic surgeon banging out inventions in his own tool shed. And really, those are the humble beginnings that made us a strong organisation. And, you see it in the business world at the moment. I think companies get ahead of themselves and believe their own press, and they do so at their own peril.
What's the GPTW study?
The GPTW, that's the Great Places to Work survey.
Oh, okay, right. Yes.
And so we came in number one on the Great Places to Work last year.
Why is that?
We're a great place to work. Great place to work. We put a lot of effort both in terms of our innovation and the products we develop, but we really have a unique approach to the organisation that we build and the culture that we build, and that really is the secret of our success.
So as the boss, you're behind that. What do you do that's different, do you think?
So I'd look at it as three key areas for us. The first thing we are very particular about is in our recruiting, and we have a very stringent and quite a long recruiting process. We're very selective about who we bring into the organisation, and we have a strong philosophy around we're not necessarily hiring experience. We are looking for strengths and talents. So we don't hire the CV, we hire the person. If they come without experience, that's okay. We can help them grow and develop in their role to become great.
And how many interviews do you do, and who conducts them?
Well, we would, for one hire, I would say we would do in excess of 50 interviews.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. So about 50.
That's crazy.
Well, that's...
obviously not crazy if you've...
It works.
But gone to number one then.
Yeah, we really focus in. We do the hard work at the beginning, and if we get that selection right, the rest works out.
50 different people interviewing the candidate?
Not 50 different people. We would probably interview 50 different candidates before we hire one person.
Oh, I see. I thought you were saying that you do 50 interviews of the person.
No.
I'm just wondering how many interviews you do with each candidate before deciding.
Yeah, it would probably be 6 to 7.
Right. So, as you say, you're looking for the person rather than the CV. Mm-hmm. What qualities are you looking for? I think this is interesting to our listeners because, how do you become a great place to work is one of the big challenges everyone faces.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think you look at that in two different ways. The first is, what is the role that we're looking to fill, and what does that role require? And then there's the overall company fit. And we have a very strong view of our culture and what fits and what doesn't. And so balancing those two, what you require in the role and then what we consider as the company fit, are the two elements that we really need to tease out. For us, it's in terms of the company fit, we have a very simple philosophy. We like to hire people that are smart, that work hard and get on well with others. It's something very simple, but it takes a long process to really identify those people.
Well, everyone wants those people.
Yes, but the key to that is actually finding them and really maintaining the discipline of keeping a role vacant until you actually find that individual.
And how many people do you employ in Australia?
We're approaching 600 people in Australia and New Zealand. We're over 33,000 globally.
I presume you don't manufacture here. I guess what, you're a distribution and marketing center here?
Yeah, manufacturing is global, so we would have manufacturing sites in the US, Europe, in Asia. What we do get involved in here locally is more on the R&D side. So we don't have the scale to manufacture here at the moment. However, we have a fantastic knowledge base within our clinician community, and then also through our local universities. And we're often involved in the front end of our research and development projects, particularly in robotics, our work here that we do locally feeds into the global development plan. So we tend to be much more focused around the innovation side of things rather than the manufacturing.
There's a lot of talk that Australia doesn't have much of an innovation culture. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, I would strongly disagree. I think we've got the kernels of a fantastic innovation culture, particularly in the healthcare and med tech space. We've got fantastic universities. We've got great hospitals, great clinicians, and the ingredients are there really for driving great innovation within Australia. You have to remember, Australia was the country that developed the cochlear implant. We will probably be the first to develop the bionic eye. And we are leading the charge in terms of R&D within robotics for orthopedics as well.
We are, are we?
Yes. Yeah. So we are currently working with the St. Vincent's Group in Melbourne, along with the University of Melbourne and RMIT, along with Stryker, and we are developing the next platform for robotics, particularly for bone cancer patients. And so that R&D cell is being led out of Melbourne, and that will be exported to the world once we finish that project.
Fantastic. Well, it's great to talk to you, Maurice. Thanks very much.
Fantastic. Thanks for your time.
I've been talking to Maurice Ben-Mayer, who's the president of Stryker in the South Pacific.